Before we get to today's Family Talk broadcast, this special program note, Dr. James Dobson is scheduled to appear on Your World with Neil Cavuto, that's on the Fox News Channel, today, Thursday, January 13th. He'll be weighing in on all the issues surrounding the tragic shootings at the supermarket event in Arizona. Again, that's Your World with Neil Cavuto on the Fox News Channel, airing 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Check your local listings to find out when you can catch this program in your area.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Lou Ann Crane.
Thanks for joining us here on Family Talk. You know, Dad and Lou Ann, I am so thankful as the father of a young child for yesterday's program. Mm-hmm. It really did cut through the red tape and the misinformation and media hype about childhood immunizations.
Well, I agree, Ryan. My kids are a little older than yours, and I am constantly amazed by all the changes going on in the medical field. Dr. Dobson, it is really hard to keep up with it.
That's really true. And as Ryan alluded to, there's a lot of confusion among parents about this issue. Many of them wonder, for example, if vaccines do cause autism and other illnesses. There are just so many topics we need to talk about that are related to this issue. To navigate it, I've invited two distinguished physicians to be with us last time. And I'm very pleased to say that they're back with us for another day. There's simply too much information to cover
for sure.
In only 25 minutes. Dr. Walt Larimore has been in family medicine for over 20 years. He's delivered more than 1,500 babies. He earned his degree from Louisiana State University School of Medicine, and he's authored a number of books. Dr. Wayne Gage has been in practice for 35 years in both family and emergency medicine, earning his degree from the University of Texas Medical School at Houston. He's also been published in several prestigious medical journals. Gentlemen, with that, let me welcome you again and thank you for being with us to talk about immunizations for children and adults.
Well, thank you, Jim. We appreciate your having us back again. And I am thankful that you have such a concern about people's health and about keeping children and adults healthy and helping them to live longer.
Well, you and Dr. Larimore are going to be our two-person panel from now on to help us deal with this. Dr. Larimore, welcome.
It's good to be back, Jim.
Well, we were talking about immunization of children, as I said, and that is a must for those who want to keep their kids healthy and to protect them from deadly diseases. I think we made that case. I certainly hope so, even though I expect to be criticized for what we had to say.
And, Doctor, if anybody missed that, that's available online.
Absolutely. But what about adults? Many adults have not been immunized for any diseases. And we're going to talk today with Dr. Larimore and Dr. Gage again about the wisdom of protecting ourselves from diseases that can be fatal. And I think I quoted last time the statistic that indicated between 50 and 70,000 adults die each year from diseases that are preventable. And the big three, from what I've read, are pneumococcal infection, or pneumonia, and flu, and hepatitis B. Those, I'm told, are the big three. You don't need to get them, because there are preventable ways to deal with it, or at least I'm going to ask our two authorities on this subject about that. I'm told that adult immunization rates remain pretty low, something like 40 or 50%. And that's just some of the list that I read last time of the diseases that are preventable. Is it true that most people walking around are not immunized against these diseases that can kill you?
That's been my personal experience, Jim. I work in an urgent care now and have a chance to ask a lot of adults about their immunization status, and they usually don't know when the last time was that they had a shot or if the shot that they had is worn off. especially for pertussis and pneumonia. People will know whether they've had a flu shot or not, but they don't know if they're up to date on their tetanus or their pertussis or their pneumonia. They also know whether they've had the shot for shingles or Zostavax or not. The other ones, they're just unsure about most of the time.
Listen, I want to tell you, I had the shingles. You know, because I was in Washington, D.C., and I was in the shower, and I dropped my shaver, and I leaned down and picked it up. And when I stood up, I hit the faucet, and it hit me right above the forehead on the left side. And you said that's the fifth cranial nerve that was obviously damaged there. It hurt like the mischief, but about 2 days later, it was hurting a different place. It was hurting 2 inches below that, and then 2 inches below that. So I called you, and I said, Wayne, my good friend, I got a problem here. What do you think's going on? And you told me I had shingles, and you told me exactly what it would do. You said that it would move across my forehead and then down around my left eye, would not get into the eye because that comes from a different nerve, and would go out toward my ear. That's exactly what happened. You said, get on the plane and get home. So I jumped on the plane, and I did get back, and you gave me some medication for it, and my shingles lasted 8 days. With everyone else, or most people, it lasts months and sometimes years. And all I know is that's the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life. I would be sitting at a table having a meeting, and it would be like somebody stuck an ice pick into my head. It was amazing how it'd come out of nowhere. That's a disease you don't want, right?
Well, that's true. You know, shingles is an interesting illness, I think. You know, you get it from having chicken pox maybe when you're 10 years old, and then you can be 70, and, you know, 60 years later, this virus that's been dormant like a hibernating bear can just come to life from just minor injury. And it's a disease that can either be mild to severe, and in some people it can last a long time. And a certain percentage of especially older people get the PHN, the postherpetic neuralgia or postherpetic neuropathy. And that can be the long-term thing where you have pain and sensitivity. If you had had that, you wouldn't even want to wear a hat or a cap or get out in the cold air. Mm-hmm. And that can be a serious and debilitating illness. And it's not decreased by the antiviral prescription, by the Zovirax or Famvir or Valtrex that we can give. It doesn't get any better because you took that, or less likely to happen. The only way to prevent that postherpetic neuralgia is to prevent the disease, which is the vaccine.
Now, tell me if the immunization against shingles is effective.
That's a good question. The answer is, it's not effective for the other kinds, like for chickenpox or for the STDs. It's about 50% effective, which, you know, you wish you'd get a little more bang for your buck since it cost, $220. But the people who do get shingles are going to have a much milder case and be glad that they had the vaccination, because it can be a devastating disease.
And no one who has been vaccinated for shingles gets the postherpetic neuralgia. That's the salvation, is it prevents the nerve damage that can be lifelong, chronic pain. Also, people who get the shingles after the vaccine get very, very mild cases that respond to the medication. So it's a wonderful vaccine. It's not inexpensive. But for our listeners who are under 60 who say, well, what can I do? There's the chickenpox vaccine that's not only recommended for children and teens and young adults and middle-agers, the whole spectrum of folks who've never had chickenpox or who are not immune to chickenpox can, with two far more inexpensive vaccines, not only be protected from chickenpox when they're younger, but are much less likely to develop shingles when they're younger.
So if you had that vaccine when you were a child, does that still count as an adult? Or are you saying you need to be revaccinated for chickenpox as an adult?
If you've had the two immunizations, there are almost a lifelong protection from those two chickenpox vaccines. But even with the chickenpox vaccine, or even if you've had chickenpox, they still recommend the shingles vaccine for all adults starting at age 60.
Yesterday, I read the list of diseases that can be prevented by immunizations, and there are a lot of people listening to us today that didn't hear yesterday's program. I'm going to list them again because there are a lot of people listening to us today who didn't hear yesterday's program, and it bears repeating, and then I'm going to ask you a question. They are diphtheria, shingles, influenza, pneumococcus, tetanus, Haemophilus influenza, hepatitis A, measles, meningococcal, mumps, pertussis, polio, rotavirus, rubella, and chickenpox. That's quite a lineup. Why would the majority of adults walk around unprotected when they can prevent these diseases from occurring? Why are we so unsuccessful? I understand why many parents would be nervous about immunizing their children, because you don't want to do anything that's going to get them off on the wrong foot, even though we made a case for doing it. But why adults?
Yeah, Jim, that's a great question. And I think the answer to it's somewhat similar to the answer for parents who choose not to vaccinate their children. Because the vaccines have been so successful at preventing fatal diseases, we don't see the illnesses now that doctors used to in the past, that parents used to, that people used to. But that's beginning to change. I'll give you just one example. Pertussis, or whooping cough, or what we doctors call the 100-day scourge, because the cough is so terrible. It's not typically a fatal disease in adults, but we're beginning, because of lack of immunization, to see epidemics of pertussis. The most recent is occurring in Southern California. It's the largest epidemic of pertussis in decades, and it's not only debilitating people who get it, it's killing children who get it, because adults who are not immunized against pertussis, against whooping cough, can spread it to children. Ryan, I'm getting more and more young parents who are telling their grandparents, if you don't get your pertussis immunization, you can't see your grandchild.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Because the child gets those immunizations at 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months, but they're not fully protected. And so I'm also having young parents who are telling the grandparent, you won't see your grandbaby unless you get the flu vaccine. Why? Because parents are realizing that they can provide a cocoon of protection around their children by getting the grandparents immunized against flu and DPT.
How about meningitis? Can you prevent meningitis with a vaccine?
You can, Jim. And vaccine is very effective. It's recommended for age 11 to 18, especially kids are going off to college. Unfortunately, a lot of the colleges don't require that, but it's something that parents really ought to provide for their children.
I can attest to that. I've sent two off to college, and they both that was highly recommended for both of them.
So it is highly recommended. If you're going to be living in a dorm or an apartment with two or three other people, you really need to get your meningitis. It's a one-time shot. You don't have to get a booster. It's also recommended for any U.S. recruits. Anybody in the military has to get it. I know at the Air Force Academy, all the cadets have to get that. And it's recommended for people who are exposed to meningitis during an outbreak. As you may know, just in November this month, there was a sophomore at Colorado State University, a young girl who died from meningitis. Her case was connected with four other cases, and they had a mass immunization where 8,000 people were immunized in one weekend to try to prevent that, what can be deadly disease, from spreading.
Talk about tetanus.
Tetanus is an interesting organism. Tetanus is caused by a germ called Clostridium tetani, and the way it reproduces is by producing spores, much like a flower would produce pollen, and those spores get scattered all over the world. Tetanus is what's called a ubiquitous organism, which means it's everywhere, and it's in the soil. actually the rusty nail kind of gets a bad rap because rust actually has nothing to do with tetanus. But if a nail is rusty, it's often out in the dirt or in the ground and you step on it and you push the dirt up inside. So a tetanus-prone wound especially is if you have a penetrating wound like a nail puncture, especially out in the barnyard, you know, where pigs and chickens, horses and sheep and cattle are grazing. They eat dirt along with with the grass, and that the spores pass through their intestinal systems unchanged. And so those kind of wounds are very tetanus prone. Now, if you just simply cut yourself in the kitchen with a knife or in the garage with a box cutter, those are not tetanus prone, and you're very unlikely to get, you know, a tetanus infection from that. But if you have a clean wound, like just a clean cut with a knife, we want someone to have had a tetanus shot within 10 years. But if it's a tetanus prone or dirty wound, we will re-immunize them in the ER if it's only been 5 years.
What's the mortality rate for those that get it?
It's about 11%. And it's almost always in people who are over 60 or unvaccinated, those two categories. But the mortality depends on which study you look at. It ranges from 11 to 70%, but it's high. It's hard to treat by the time you develop symptoms. And mortality is always, it seems to be in people who are over 60 or people who don't have the vaccination or both.
How effective is the vaccination?
The vaccination is extremely effective.
I hope everybody heard you say, Dr. Gage, that whooping cough is at an epidemic level now, that it is very, very common. You know, I had that as a child, and I obviously survived it. I'm not absolutely positive of that, but I remember hearing my parents talk about it, and I remember having an incredible cough. But it's back, and it's back with a vengeance.
That is true, Jim. Whooping cough or pertussis has been on such a steady rise in the last 4 years since 2006, and cases are on a 25-fold increase over the last 30 years. The immunity for childhood pertussis wears off someplace between 5 and 10 years after the last booster is given at age 5. Mm-hmm. So for sure, by 10 years later at age 15, there's no protection. So adult vaccination for pertussis is recommended starting at age 10 to 15. And it's so important for new mothers and those who have close or daily contact with infants like daycare workers to be vaccinated because transmission is often from the adult to the child. And it's statistically, it's 7% of people that are adults that get a bad cough have pertussis, often don't know it, and then don't get treated and spread it. It's highly contagious because the cough is so persistent, you can even break ribs, and I've seen that happen in several patients. And when you cough, you spread the germs out 2 or 3 feet. And certainly the population that is most at risk are young children under age 12 months.
Dr. Larimore, answer this question for me. Some people have said that in human history, this is the heyday in the control of bacterial infection. But it's at risk now.
Well, yeah, not just bacterial, viral infections. We now have vaccinations against viral infections, hepatitis B, hepatitis A being great examples. The chance to save life, of all the public health measures we have, sanitation would be number one. That saved more lives than anything else. But after that, a close second is immunization. But because we've forgotten so many of these diseases, you remember pertussis, whooping cough. Ryan won't. Because of vaccinations, his generation hasn't seen it. Now it's starting to come back. Mm-hmm. But it's a reminder not just to catch up on the immunizations we've missed, but to get those we ought to have. The immunization, the DPT for adults, is called DTAP, D-T-A-P. I kind of tell my patients diphtheria, tetanus, and adult pertussis. Mm-hmm. But it actually means acellular pertussis. It's a purified vaccine. Even though we give more shots, Dr. Gage mentioned that, they have far fewer proteins. They have far fewer antigens. That's why it's so much safer. When Wayne and I were younger and we would give DPT shots to kids, a large number of those kids would have reactions. They'd have irritability and soreness and redness and fever. And some of them would even have seizures and abscesses. We don't see that anymore. The vaccines are pure, they're safer, and they're more effective than they've ever been.
Dr. Gage, you mentioned with the whooping cough, you can get that from touching a doorknob. Talk about the effectiveness of all these germicide gels that we see everywhere. They're popping up in my kids' classrooms. You've got to, you know, wash your hands with that every time you go out the door. Are they effective?
They actually are, and they're much more effective than soap and water because they're just alcohol in a gel form. And you'll notice that most of the grocery stores have the wipes or the gel there. And in the hospitals now, there's a pumper outside of every room, and nurses don't have to wash their hands anymore, but they have to use that gel upon going in and coming out. And that just has really cut down on the contagious rate. So I ask mothers to, you know, carry that with them and put it on their kids' hands and also use it to wipe off not only the card in the grocery store, but like the stylus that you're going to be using to sign the touchpad at the checkout counter. If you think about it from a practical standpoint, thousands of people have touched that. A bunch of them are going to be sick. Some of them, 7% of people that have a bad cough will have pertussis, and you're picking that up, and then you can take it home. So those are very effective to use, and just be cautious about not touching surfaces that other people touch. Airports are terrible, and the rails that are on the moving sidewalks or on escalators, don't hold on to those if you don't need to. If you do, use the gel.
Going back to the flu vaccine, many people think you can get the flu from that immunization. And that's not true, is it?
That's correct. And I hear that all the time. Now, the flu shot is a killed virus and is absolutely impossible to get the flu. You can get some mild flu-like symptoms like a little headache or a low-grade fever and some myalgias or achiness, but and makes people feel like maybe they've got the flu, but they're very mild these days. You cannot get the flu unless you're getting the flu mist. Now, the flu mist avoids the shot and it's the spray, but the flu mist still is very safe except for people that are immunocompromised. So if they're on chemotherapy or have cancer or they have diseases like HIV that compromise their immune system, maybe they've got rheumatoid arthritis and they're taking those shots that you hear advertised on TV all the time, those people cannot have the flu mist. But most people just get the flu shot, and you can't possibly get the flu from the shot.
Elaborate on that. Who should not get immunized?
Jim, that's an important question because the flu vaccine this year is recommended for virtually everyone 6 months of age and older. In the past, we gave it to people who were pregnant or had more complications like asthma or chronic diseases. This year, it's for everyone 6 months and older. The flu mist, the nasal spray, is for children starting at age 2 all the way up to adults at age 50. But the injection from 6 months all the way till death.
And parents need to know that up to age 8 years, the vaccine is split in half, so you get two half doses 3 or 4 weeks apart.
Well, we're out of time again, so very, very quickly. I would like in the last minute here to go back to where we started with the first program when we were talking about immunizations in children and the controversy that is associated with autism. We can't go back and address that again, but we put it to rest. There is no relationship between the two. But that's probably what we ought to say here at the end with regard to immunization of both children and adults. Don't deprive yourself or your kids of the medical knowledge and the opportunity to protect them from these diseases. Make the last case for that, Walt.
Well, Jim, you and I have worked together for 10 years now, and you have faced controversy after controversy after controversy. Your listeners know that they can listen to you and they will get the truth. When it comes to immunizations, there's lots of information that's not true. So despite the fact that you've predicted you'll get letters and calls and emails about this, I respect once again you bringing a difficult, controversial topic to the front because parents and those of us who are adults know we can depend upon you to provide the truth for us so that we can make wise decisions about how we and our families can be and remain highly healthy.
Have you ever heard the phrase, a glutton for punishment? Has that ever?
Well, I think that's what we've come to expect from you, is that you're willing to do that on behalf not just of the Lord Jesus Christ and his kingdom, but for his followers, those who know him now and those who will. And it's a delight for me to sit at this microphone and see not only you take that standard on, but to see your son picking it up also.
Well, the two of you, my two physician friends, have also done that. If you only tell people what will please the ears, you're not going to accomplish the purpose that we're here to do. Thank you, Dr. Walt Larimore and Dr. Wayne Gage, for being with us. These have been fascinating programs for me, and we'll have you back.
It's a treat. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
And we hope that you, as a listener, have found this discussion helpful for your own family as you make healthcare decisions for your kids or maybe even your parents as they're getting a little older. If this has been helpful, let us know about it. You can email us at myfamilytalk.com or give us a call, 877-732-6825. 877-732-6825.
Or join our conversation on our Facebook page. The link is at myfamilytalk.com. And when you call or you're online, request a CD of our two-day program on this issue to share with your family or someone else who needs this information.
On behalf of all of us here, thanks for taking time out of your busy life to join us today and return for one final program this week here on Family Talk. We'll see you then.